Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on Radio MD, iHeart, or wherever you downloaded us from. Thank you for doing that. We, of course, are brought to you, as usual, by Life's First Naturals, the makers of both Truebiotics and Bovine Coastrum, and Diresq, that has been shown to decrease the side effects substantially, at least in anecdotal studies. The other two have been shown in randomized controlled trials, but in anecdotal studies with weight loss, the GLP-1 weight loss drugs, Ozempic, Wegovy, and the GLP-1 and GIP weight loss drugs, tirzepatide, which is Mounjaro and Zepbound. Our guest today is Professor Stephen Frank. Stephen is the Donald Bren Professor and UCI, that's University of California, Irvine, Distinguished Professor in the School of Biologic Sciences, and has done what is considered breakthrough work on cancer. Dr. Frank, I've always thought of cancer as a mutation caused by X-rays or some other mutation due to a duplication irregularity in a cell. Your work points to a different origin. Tell us about it.
Yes, certainly genetics plays a big role, and we see a lot of evidence that genetic changes in cells are associated with cancer. And so the standard view for the last 30 years or so has been that we know particular genes that are mutated in cancers, and we think we know what they do. Just to give a couple quick examples as background, if you think about a cancer as tissue that's spreading throughout the body, and how does that come about? And we think of that as happening two key steps. First of all, our cells normally have protection so that if something goes wrong, the cells kill themselves. They have like a built-in suicide program, and that protects your body. So for a cancer to develop, you have to knock out those normal protections. And we know that some gene mutations do that. For example, there's a famous gene, if you read about cancer, called P53, and it's called the guardian of the genome. And many cancers, this P53 gene is mutated. And so then cells don't die normally, and that allows them to spread. And then the second thing you need is cells to divide faster. And we know some genes cause cells, when they're mutated, to divide faster. We call those oncogenes. Just means genetic mutations which cause the genes, cause the cells to divide faster. And a famous gene is KRAS. And so we have this well-developed and well-understood view of cancer. And there's a lot of truth to that. I'm not saying it's not true. But in the last couple of years, we've had new techniques that have shown us a variety of new aspects of how cancers develop. And this is, I think, really revolutionary. The normal view is of cancer is you get a mutation to P53, your cells don't die like they should. You get a mutation to KRAS and the cells divide faster. So now you've got cells that are dividing faster and not dying. You're on your way to a tumor. That's basically the story of modern cancer research. But we've had new technologies that now let us look at individual cells and what really happens. And this is very recent. But what we see is that these genes like KRAS and P53, they're actually, what they often seem to be doing is reversing the normal developmental process. So if you think about how your body develops, your father's sperm and your mother's egg unite to make one cell. And from that one cell, your body develops and has all the different kinds of tissues, hair, pancreas, you got your stomach, the heart, and you have about 37 trillion cells in your body. So you have a very complex process that changes that one cell into all the cells in your body. And then when you get developed, fully developed, then your cells kind of lock into their function. So skin cells become skin cells and they don't change. Pancreatic cells become pancreatic cells and they don't change. So this is the normal process. But now what we're seeing, and this is the interesting part, is that mutations to genes like P53 and KRAS What they're also doing is that they're taking a cell which is locked into being, let's say, the lining of your lung, and it's starting to reverse the process and make it go backwards in development. We call that dedifferentiation. And so the cells go backwards, and what they end up doing is becoming cells that are more like what heals wounds. Like if you get a piece of your lung tissue gets damaged, then you get cells that dedifferentiate into wound healing cells. And these are like the cells that made your body when you were a little baby developing. And they start to fill things in. And cancer often is this process of dedifferentiation, where you're getting these cells that are more like developmental cells. And so if you think what a tumor is like development gone wrong. You're making a new tissue that isn't a normal tissue. So you're going back to the developmental phase, but instead of developing properly, you've got all of this machinery that's very good at making new tissues that build your body. And now you're unleashing them again. And now they're going to rearrange and make a different kind of tissue, which is a tumor. A tumor is complicated. It's got many different functions. And so this is the thing we're seeing. And so instead of thinking of the genes mutating and causing cancer, what we're seeing is that these genes are changing, and then they're opening up the developmental process again.
Let me interrupt you, since we do a lot of work on longevity and a lot of interest in longevity, and the other sponsor of the program is, in fact, the Longevity Playbook. This brings up the sense, if you can de-differentiate, is it possible we will learn to control that and be able to get younger again and repair ourselves again?
I should have thought you would ask that question because I know your work. That's a brilliant question. I haven't thought about that, but your point is a very good one because a lot of the cancer process is exactly this dedifferentiation and then cells that are very good at wound healing and repair, but it's very hard to control. So the question is, to answer your question, we would need to think a bit more about how we could control that powerful set of processes, which is what will cause cancer if uncontrolled, and learn to control it and use it and sort of unleash this latent regenerative power. So some animals are very good at regenerating. You can cut off part of their body and they just rebuild it. Humans are not very good at that. Our cells tend to be really locked into that final state, and there's a lot of protection against going back. And these cells that are more flexible, our bodies avoid that as much as possible. So your question is very interesting. Can we harness that? I don't have an answer to that question, but I think that that would be a line of research which is interesting. Some people are thinking about it. I don't have any more to say about it, but it's a beautiful question.
And we should say you are the world's expert in this approach on cells. When you think of it, is there a more than one cell de-differentiating at the time? And is that why cancer chemotherapy may not work effectively with some tumors that aren't uniform? But in fact, there are, when you de-differentiate, you de-differentiate into multiple cell lines.
Yes, I think that your question about treatment is an interesting one. The standard view of treatments work initially. So this is the simple story of cancer, is we have a lot of treatments that work, but then they fail because the tumor changes in response to the treatment. And the standard modern view from cancer research goes back to this genetic view, which is that to prevent resistance, you need to prevent new mutations from arising. But the change in notions about treatment that come from what I'm telling you about dedifferentiation and what your question's associated with is that if we need to think about treatment, we need not to think about so much about those mutations. We need to think about the way in which the tissues are releasing this dedifferentiated power. And we have some good examples of that, like melanoma. We see that when we treat certain melanomas with drugs, at first it works, but what happens is that the cells do, in fact, do a very particular dedifferentiation to a kind of cell. It's a technical term, but it's interesting. It's called a neural crest cell. And these are among the most interesting cells in all of biology, not just in humans. So it's an interesting question. Why is melanoma so dangerous? We all know that melanoma spreads rapidly throughout the body and is a very deadly disease, but it's just a tumor of the pigmented cells in your skin. There's another kind of skin tumor, basal cell carcinoma, which is very mild and doesn't really cause problems. So an interesting question, this is, you know, what science is about. Here's a comparison. Why are basal cell carcinomas so mild, but melanoma so dangerous? And the melanomas are dangerous because in normal development, the cell that makes a pigmented skin cell, a melanocyte, is this neural crest cell. So when you go back in different in development, you're getting a neural crest cell from a melanoma. Whereas with basal cell carcinoma, I don't know what it is, but it's a much different kind of cell. Neural crest cells, when you're an embryo, your body's developing, very complicated. The neural crest cells are running all over the place, helping out in development. They're kind of like the quarterbacks of development. They're involved in making nerve cells and heart tissue, and they're migrating all over the place. And so they're very good at migrating around and changing tissues. Well, this is very dangerous when you're an adult to have cells that are very good at migrating around and very good at changing tissues. This is what a metastatic spread is, and what you die of almost always is a metastatic spread. So melanoma is a very dangerous thing. So what we see in drug treatment is at first the drugs work against melanoma, but then the melanoma cells tend to de-differentiate into these neural crest cells, which are not so responsive to treatment. The cells that are involved in wound healing, the de-differentiated cells, tend to be resistant to drugs, generally speaking. So this de-differentiation process is what's so dangerous.
Now, do neural crest cells, because they are immunologically protected, put out the, if you will, the checkpoint process, meaning they put out a checkpoint inhibitor, they stimulate the checkpoint in some way, because what we've learned is that checkpoint inhibitors are especially good against metastatic malignant melanoma. And I'm wondering if the neural crest, because it is, I mean, you brought up a very interesting point. It probably is immunologically protected, so we don't knock off the neural crest when we're developing.
I don't know the exact answer to that. The general answer is that the cells that are involved in wound healing, dedifferentiated cells, they're often called mesenchyme, and you see this discussed a lot in cancer when you get a differentiation. Mesenchyme is just kind of a group of cells that are important in development, and they're less differentiated. They tend to be generally resistant to a lot of things. So I don't know the specific answer to your specific question, but in general, you can think that the answer to that kind of question tends to be yes, that these dedifferentiated cells tend to be generally hardy, resistant. They can deal with stress better, whereas your normal cells, they're pretty sensitive. They give up pretty easily.
Now, one of the things you did in your past, and I hope I'm not bringing up something too far in the past, is you looked at the evolution of infectious diseases. And do bacteria do the same type of de-differentiation when they're presented with antibiotics that helps them mutate and survive against our antibiotics?
Great question. Almost. It's not so much, so we see this, there's a process in antibiotic treatment where if you treat bacteria with an antibiotic, even if you just do it in a dish, a few of the cells will survive. And so the first thought, going back to the genetic dominance or the way we think about things, is, okay, well, those bacteria must have a mutation that makes them resistant because they didn't die and all the other cells died. But if you take those cells that survive and you do the same thing again and you grow them up, most of the babies from those cells die. So they're actually not genetically different, but they're in a different state. So one of the common things in the bacterial case is that cells that are not dividing are resistant to treatment because a lot of the treatments attack what happens during cell division. And so just by chance, you have a lot of cells. A few of them are just kind of taking a break. They're not dividing. And those cells survive. And then when they start to divide again, they become susceptible to the treatment. We see the same thing going back to the melanoma example. This is exactly what happens in the melanoma case. You treat with a drug, the tumor cells die, except a few of them don't. And what's happening is that there's a kind of a random process where a small fraction of the melanocyte-type cells that are melanoma are going back to neural crest-like cells that are resistant, but they can go back and forth. They're just kind of fluctuating back and forth, just kind of randomly. So a few cells happen to be in a state that lets them survive. We call those persisters. And we're starting to see this in many drug treatments. You see this in, I don't remember all the details, but in colon cancer, when treated, and there's also evidence that you get persister cells. And so this is based on the bacterial research, because we've known about this from antibiotics for a long time, but it's only in the last couple of years that we're starting to see this in cancer. And the reason that we're seeing all these things in cancer now is because only a few years ago did we get the ability to study single cells. It used to be that we could only study a big hunk of tissue all at once, and we couldn't see what was happening in the individual cells. So you might think like 100 million cells, that only weighs about 3 ounces. It's tiny. And so to study what's going on in 100 million cells, it took that many cells. And so all you could see was the average, and you couldn't see the individuals. It would be like studying diabetes if all you could measure was the average level of diabetes in a population of 100 million people, and you couldn't see the individual variation. Now we have this new technique. It's like a microscope, like discovering a microscope. We can now see the cells. And so we can see some cells are in neural crest state, some cells are in melanocyte, they're melanocytes, and they're going back and forth, and we can see this process. And this is what's, I think, causing this revolution, how we understand cancer. So it used to be P53. Everybody knew what P53 did. P53, when a cell is damaged and not behaving properly, the cell dies normally. And that's important to protect against cancer. And you knock out P53, and the cells that are abnormal don't die. So that's a big step towards cancer. That's one of the foundations of modern cancer research. But now we look at P53. It turns out that P53 is a key regulator in differentiation. And so it's shown in lung tumors that when P53 gets knocked out, the normal lung cells, the lining of your lung, they start to back off and turn into the earlier developmental state. And the earlier developmental state is like a wound healing state. It's like a mesenchyme. It's resistant to treatment. It can make many different kinds of tissues. So this is a little technical, but it's totally fascinating. So let me try it out on you. In a recent study on lung cancer, so the two really big genes that everybody studies in cancer, P53 and KRAS. So P53, tumor suppressor, right? It causes cells to die when they're abnormal. KRAS causes cells to divide faster. So that's the classic genetics. But now with the single cell study ability, hey, look at what happens in lung tumors. You knock out KRAS, you knock out P53, and now the cells that are normal lung cells are starting to express cell types that are normally used to make the placenta. Now, if you want to make a tumor, a placenta is perfect, right? Because placentas are really good at grabbing blood. They're really good at invading tissues. They're really good at attracting resources. It's like you're well on your way. So now these lung cells are kind of going back in development, and they're expressing part of the trophoblast, the placenta program from early development. They're expressing part of a kidney program that's involved in kidney repair. Again, one of these wound healing type things from kidney cells. And they express what normally makes cartilage. Now, cartilage is also what's used when you make a tissue. It's what holds cells together. So if you're going to make a new kind of tissue, you've got to hold those cells together. So now you've got these lung cells, they're going back in development, and you've got cells that are expressing all these different components. So they've got all the tools to make a new kind of tissue that's very dangerous. Now, your question would be, if we could harness that, we could do a lot of good. And that's a great question. And I'm sure there are a few people thinking about that, but I haven't seen much about that. So that's very interesting.
And in fact, the tumors that arise from that are very lethal. But let me thank you. It's incredibly stimulating. People can find out more about Dr. Frank and his work by stevefrank.org, S-T-E-V-E-F-R-A-N-K, two first names, stevefrank.org, and the real name, Stephen A. Frank. He's a professor, the distinguished professor at UC Irvine, and his formal name is, in fact, the Donald Bren Professor and UCI Distinguished Professor in the School of Biologic Sciences. I can't thank you enough for being with us. Again, we are sponsored by Life's First Naturals, the makers of TruBiotics and Bovine Colostrum, as well as Dye Rescue. Go to their website and see the randomized double-blind controlled trials of how both TruBiotics and Bovine Colostrum work to decrease many what we would call chronic conditions, and the specific ones they work on, upper respiratory infections and some of the infections involving urinary tract. The other sponsor is longevityplaybook.com. Go to their website and sign up for the free newsletter. Dr. Frank, thank you very much, not only for your groundbreaking work, which I think has the real potential of leading to a lot of new investigations and advances in both cancer and, I would say, in developmental biology and maybe in aging as well. I can't thank you enough for coming on, but especially the 50,000 of you a week who download the podcast. Thank you. You're the reason we do it. Thanks again. We'll be back next week. This was 1225B. Tune into the A's. That's the latest medical news of the week and what it means to you. Thanks again, Dr. Frank.